And here's what we're going to do with the camera. We're going to have it follow the back of your legs right into your butthole. And that's just going to be the camera movement for about 10 seconds.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, presented by CinemaSins.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, a weekly look at everything going on inside the world of CinemaSins. I'm Aaron Dicer, and I'm joined as always by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
And Nate.
Or should I say hello, hello? Since apparently I'm British.
And Nate Hughes.
Hello, hello.
We write for...
Did I do that right?
What's wrong? How could you do that
British.
Wrong?
Well, I was trying to like make it like the creepy sort of like the way that Jonathan, hello, hello. But I've never seen the content that he references.
Oh, I see. I see. Mm-hmm. No, I'm sure it was fine.
Oh, I wasn't referencing anything. I was just being dumb. I thought Aaron was like being like all royal. It sounded like
I'm
the way he was
doing
my
an
name.
Intro here, guys. I've got a sentence left.
Okay.
You already entered us.
We write your CinemaSins and TV Sins and do various other things inside the CinemaSins universe as well. Now go. Just go and talk about whatever you want.
I just said you already entered us. I didn't say introduce. I said enter.
So this is the show. Guys, this is the show today.
If we were all in the same room together and Aaron was trying to like rein us in, I feel like at some point in time he would just like put his hand over Jonathan's mouth and my mouth and just like talk into the microphone just to shut us up.
There's a point you reach where you're just like, okay, I gotta pad the walls. That's the only choice now. Like I can't stop them from running into the walls. I just have to make it more comfortable for them. So that's kind of where we're at today.
Thank you for entering us.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. How are you guys? I mean, we're obviously loopy. We just recorded a members only show for the Sin Club members based on a question from them, which we do every month. And so we kind of got a little loopy from that. So now we're entering into the main show. And now we're loopy on main. And that's just happening now. So,
we mainline loopiness around here.
You guys got to get into that Patreon thing. Listen to that Bony Pod, man. It was the bee's knees, I'm telling you.
It is true.
I mean, it was just... everyone's gonna be buzzing about it.
The coolest thing, how did we ever get to the point where it was like, you know what the coolest thing ever is? Where bees' legs bend. That's like is there anything that describes amazingness better than the leg joint of flying insects? I mean,
I've never thought about that. Never thought about it.
Okay. I did my infamous quick Google search. Incredibly accurate.
Yes.
Says the phrase "the bee's knees," which was originally an 18th century fanciful phrase, which referred to something that didn't exist. Kind of spoof item apprentices would be sent to the stores to fetch, like a tartan paint or a left-handed hammer. This meaning is no longer used.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for Danae's trademark, incredibly accurate instant Google search. We'll have to do those every once in a while. That makes a lot of sense. It reminds me of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, which we now use as an actual thing to be like, hey, you can do it. Do it yourself.
You can do it.
When the phrase originally started, it was about impossible things. It meant literally that something was impossible. You can't pull yourself up by your bootstraps. So people would use it to be like, you know, yeah, go ahead, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, as in it's never happening. And now we use it as an actual, you know, thing to encourage people. It's just like, come on.
I love stuff like that.
Come
Me
on.
Me too. Yeah. Except for the use of literally. I think I'm always going to be a little upset that the word literally does not mean literally.
Yeah.
No, it does. It does. That's like
that
some
one's
crap.
Gonna bug me.
Yeah.
That's like they finally just gave in and put ain't in the dictionary. No, I'm sorry. Literally is what it means.
It will be what people decide it will be. Language is always evolving and changing. And
David Cross has, I don't know if you could find this. I saw this was like back in the early 2000s. He had a bit about people using literally wrong. And he's talking about, he had this conversation with this guy that was like, I literally shit my pants. He's like, oh, that must have been rough, man. Did you have to like go home or was it a mess? You know, like, I mean, he's like, no, I didn't really shit my pants. I literally shit my pants.
Yeah. Let's talk about language. Let's do it. Actually, we're here to talk about CinemaSins content, I think is technically
why
we're here.
Language. In our
we
videos.
Do. It is part of what we do, and it's part of what we love to do. So let's get into it. We'll start with the Sin Side Scoop.
What's it building in there.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
This is a true story.
We're going to take a look at the videos from the week, the process of sending them, how we felt about the stuff we're sending in general. We are still on a Phineas and Ferb run on TV Sins, and so we did the Star Wars episode of Phineas and Ferb. This was a Dicer Hughes script, Danae and I writing on this one. I don't have anything to add to this except Disney loves putting their properties together, and now that they have Phineas and Ferb and Star Wars, of course there was going to be...
I have something to add though. I did not like this.
Interesting.
This episode. Yeah, I thought it, I didn't think it was funny at all. I thought it was really, you know, it was really funny that you had the wink, wink.
Yeah, it's very fan service.
Yeah.
Because that's all this episode. That's all this was.
Yes.
Like, and which was sad because Phineas and Ferb is a genuinely funny show.
Right.
You know, and I felt like this was just. I guess we should do a Star Wars one. And then they, you know, but they didn't really think much beyond that. I don't want to like. I'm not. I don't want to like knock the writers and stuff. I'm just saying, for me personally, this was my least favorite episode I've seen so far.
Yeah.
I think I sort of liked it because the idea is that Phineas and Ferb somehow fit into the Star Wars universe in the background,
yeah.
Almost as if you watched the movie and you looked in the background, you might see like a platypus run by or something like that. Just that idea that layered over the top of this epic movie, this epic content is now this silly cartoon, you know.
That was the best aspect of it. Like, they didn't try to make them like Luke Skywalker or something. Like, they were still Phineas and Ferb. They were just hanging out in Star Wars.
Exactly. And as I was watching it to send it, I, not knowing what to expect, I was relieved, same as you're saying, that they tried to find a clever way to sort of go about it. I mean, it still is. And of course, they have their music going on and they still have the Phineas and Ferbisms, and you get to see these interesting things happen, like, you know, the brothers fighting each other, which has that tension that you wouldn't normally see, I guess. I mean, again, I haven't watched all Phineas and Ferb, so I'm very limited in the knowledge that I have of all of their content. And also, hey, shout out to those who left comments on a couple of episodes ago letting us know that they don't all happen in the summer, that there's a couple that are like Christmas that don't happen in the summer.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So people love this show and they're very, very well versed on it. And they love this episode as well. Like, this is a very beloved episode.
Well, I get why people like it.
Because
the jokes just fell flat for me is all it was.
Because the way they approach it makes it so that it could be canon, right? I mean, they specifically say it's not, but the idea, like, nothing has changed. And I think the creators even said we wanted to do an episode where if you could believe that this was stuff that actually happened along the same time. It really is the same concept as Lion King 1.5. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but it's the exact same thing where you've got Timon and Pumbaa in the background of all the big events from Lion King. It's kind of that side story kind of
idea. There's an actual movie called Lion King 1.5?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it like a direct-to-video or something?
I
believe it was, but it's beloved. It is definitely people who it's the most beloved Lion King sequel, I think, including the remake.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when Disney was doing all their direct-to-video sequels. Like, I think Aladdin was the big one because they actually got Robin Williams back for that one.
Yeah.
But I've never heard of Lion King 1.5. That's fun.
Well,
that sounds worth watching.
It is fun. It is really fun. I would encourage people to watch it. It's a really great movie. It's really the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead thing. Right, like it's
yeah, that's what it sounded like to me. Yeah,
yeah, it's the idea of a side story that takes place during the main story and from characters who are kind of aware that they're in a story. And
yeah,
so
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are undead, which actually is a
if I could
I
go,
also thought it,
yes, it is. If I could go back in time, I would probably make a Finn and Stanson Ferbenstern or some kind of kind of joke.
Oh, yeah,
it was interesting too to see the young girl that's always like, what doing? Sorry, fans, I don't remember her name.
Isabella.
But for her to be this different style of character where she's just this little badass, that was kind of fun too.
She was Han Solo, basically, right?
Basically,
she was
yeah.
Like, almost like his competitor. And then Candace and as a stormtrooper was also fun, I thought, because it fits her personality well, you know.
Okay,
that she's...
fine, guys. This is the best fucking thing ever. Whatever.
What was the name of her ship? What was the name of it? Was it like the Century, you know, Panda Bear or something instead of Millennium Falcon?
Was it like a gerbil or something?
Yeah, it was. I thought that was funny. It was like, we just combined an amount of time with an animal. It's just like, oh, yeah. Yeah, the Millennium Falcon makes a lot of sense.
I thought it was also like the coffee roast thing was really like it had fun, but that is kind of a segue into stuff that could have worked differently, maybe like a little bit better. So mm-hmm. it was exciting. I don't know to send this one for me.
I was very nervous going in as well.
I'm always nervous going in on Star Wars things, and I continue to wonder why am I always assigned them? I don't know.
Because you're so good at it. That's why.
Oh, right. Okay. Sure.
Yeah, I learned a lot from Chris on assigning things. He's like, assign somebody who loves something and then somebody who is indifferent to something. And so you're the indifferent one.
Always.
Always. Let's talk about the video itself. Jonathan, you didn't write on this, so why don't you kick us off? What were some of your favorite things?
I enjoyed that you were calling the episode nostalgia porn and comparing it to heroin. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
Candace's neck. That was fascinating. The way they decided to go about doing that.
Before you go on, it's the Centennial Chihuahua.
Centennial Chihuahua. That's what it was. Yeah.
Is the name of her ship.
Complimenting the store name and then sending it for not having commas. That, like, I was like, did I write that? I know I didn't, but I felt seen. So that was the main stuff I wrote down. I'm beginning to think the animators have a severe Twilight fetish was really funny. And did we talk about that on Star Wars Rebels?
We talked about my Twi'lek fetish, yeah, before. We've mentioned how I always see their head coverings as underwear. I think we've had this conversation, and so it's like...
It was actually a sin, right?
In the original... It was a sin in... but it was... Was it Rebels? Yeah, I think it was Rebels. It was some Star Wars property. We did a sin like that.
Like boxer shorts.
It looked like she was like, Danae wrote something. It looked like she was wearing like underwear or something on her head. Yeah. I had some deja vu with that, but I can't remember exactly what it was.
Yeah, Danae wrote that. Yeah. That was Danae.
Well, Danae and I wrote on Rebels, so.
Yeah, we sure did.
Because we're Star Wars fans.
That's right.
I'm on all the Star Wars stuff, guys. I like how you delivered that one too, where you're like, whew, saved it. That was really fun.
But yeah, that's all. And you guys had some observations about like the Star Wars, the stormtroopers wearing corsets, which are sexy, by the way. Not the stormtroopers, but corsets.
Mm-hmm.
But I can only imagine how uncomfortable they are.
Yeah.
I was also thinking, it was funny. I did like how you were talking about where they were like, there weren't girls there or whatever, which I totally got your point. But I was also thinking like, and there actually were girls there. But then I was like, well, I mean, if I was single and, you know, somebody was making me move somewhere where there was no possibility of a relationship, I might be a little perturbed.
But. Yeah, you'd figure it out. You'd figure it out.
There's pictures and stuff.
Danae, what do you got?
We've already said the wink, wink, but I really wanted to touch back on that because, you know, you really animated your delivery on it. I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, wink, oh, wink.
Yeah.
Just to be like super on the nose.
I actually almost commented on that. I almost noted that might not be enough. And then I saw that he did a few. I was like, well, Aaron clearly has something in mind here. So just like, you know, because it is different now that you're narrating. So like, I think I probably don't really question a lot of things because obviously if you're writing it, you know, you're... I'm in my own plan.
Yeah.
Sending the Mandalorian child again because we saw Perry jump onto the back.
Yep, had that.
That was so exciting, and it was in the comments too, which was fun. That they're in the comments is like they referenced that exact sin, saying something to the tune of, now we know why they actually did this episode, which just cracks me up to think that we would select this episode just so we can send Mandalorian again for that one moment.
Yeah.
It's just fun, you know, silly world building for what we do here on the Sins team. That's not what happened, but it was so funny to see it pop up on screen. And I'm like, yeah, see, you can go. I'm in my office watching this show freaking out like, you can get up on the back. I knew it.
I feel like Jawa ships were only created so there could be like fun action sequences like that because they don't really seem functional. Like with all the slats opening and all the ladders and stuff, it just looks like, oh, yeah, that's the setup for some kind of fun fight scene. It's like a Borg cube.
Yeah.
Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. Also, the sin about the bumper sticker and pointing out, so there's one Jawa family on this entire like fortress ship that carries so many Jawas.
Uh-huh.
how the sin flowed for the neck proportions for Candace, but saying that she's one stiff breeze away from spinal detachment. Just the verbiage of that cracked me up.
I was wondering if my wife had written that sin because she works with bracing and stuff.
It was alarming to see her in that way, yeah, where her entire neck was just this black like tube sock, and you're like, mm-hmm, whoa, no, shit, yeah, really?
No, that would be like a medical issue. Like, you would have to get that taken care of.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
In the same vein of performance, I enjoyed the delivery of the entire sin about like the bum bum bum, like going off on improv powers for, mm-hmm, the narration. That was a fun sin to write because it was one that I shot over to Aaron, and then Aaron was like, what if we did this, and we just kind of like put a couple of ideas out there, and Aaron had in his mind how he would deliver it, kind of to what you were saying earlier, Jonathan. So it's like, you know, hearing it and seeing it all in the editing process coming together, where he turns away from the mic and is like, guys, what do you mean by funny? It's just such a fun, it's just a way where we're trying to have, and we genuinely are having such a good time with these scripts. My final one, though, is trolling the audience with George Lucas rolling over in his grave and people flooding to Wikipedia to, and like, don't scare me like that. Like, you don't scare me.
Well, it's like, yes, I know he's not dead, guys. It's okay.
It's all right.
It's all
Everything's
right.
Fine.
It's okay. Everything's fine.
What about you, Aaron?
You mentioned most of what I had here. I want to mention the Bantha Hole location. Comment's very pleased to point out that, you know, the hole would not be above the tail on an
right,
animal.
Right.
So, you know, but it did look like that.
We still had to figure out, like, oh, nope, there's the tail. So
right,
that's where the butthole would be. Okay. Yeah. Which, again, makes us think about pooping. And so that's why we said it.
Yes. Yes. We definitely want to do that for Jonathan. This one actually, was for Jonathan, calling the Tuscans the Tuscan Raider Nation.
I appreciated that.
That was a shout out to Jonathan Raider Nation.
Who are now the Las Vegas Raiders, and I still want to say that franchise is undefeated as a franchise.
Nice. Very good.
2-0, baby.
Vegas, man. Just move your sports team to Vegas if you want to win.
Well, and it still works because Al Davis, their slogan was just win, baby. So now it's like just win in Vegas, baby. It works.
It works perfectly.
Perfectly.
Works perfectly. Because if these two kiss, I may not recover. Made me giggle. And then the other one I wanted to mention was, seriously, if I microwave popcorn and then take a baseball bat to the microwave, would it turn back into kernels? Actually, would it? It's like the narrator having a second thought of, wait, I've never tried that. So, but you see that in shows or movies where it's like, oh, all we got to do to change them back is destroy the machine. And it's like, how does that work? So anyway, I wanted to bring that up. All right, we can move on to Grey's Anatomy. We did another Grey's Anatomy episode. It's the end of the world. This was a Hughes Watkins script. Jonathan and Danae writing on this one. I have not seen anything about these that makes me want to watch Grey's Anatomy. I'm just not interested at all based on what I'm seeing here.
Well, that's not anything new. That's not new from last time we talked about
Grey's. No, it's not. So you guys talk about it.
But it is interesting because watching these old ones makes me wonder why I'm still watching it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
This was, I will say, this season, though, I quit watching, like, I don't know, a couple years. I probably quit watching, like, four seasons. Whenever Izzy saved that deer, that was when I quit watching. I'm like, I'm done with this fucking show. But I do remember in that second season, it was just so insane. Every week was something crazy. And
it's
it was
nuts.
Kind of exciting in a weird way. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
it was like, oh, this show is just going for it. Like, I don't know what they're going to do after this, though. And they didn't know either. And that's why the show got boring. But Danae's still watching it. So maybe not.
Maybe they should call it Cray's Anatomy.
Maybe.
C-R-A-Y.
Oh, I like it.
The other thing
I find
interesting about this series, though, is like all these people, too, like all these people keep dying. Like, this has to be like the worst hospital. Like,
right?
That's right.
If I, like, I would, do not take me to Seattle Grace. Like, it drive me 3 hours to somewhere else.
That's right.
I don't care.
I think they eventually sort of address that problem at some point. You know, like, we got to do different, and they start to shift it more into the storytelling of relationships rather than the crazy story, like the crazy things that could happen in a hospital. Cause it's just a death trap.
I love this guest cast, though. Cause like we gave Christina Ricci a send off, and then I discovered she was nominated for an Emmy. Rightfully so. She's really good in this. Kyle Chandler shows up, you know, as the bomb guy,
the bomb
there at the
guy.
End. He's more in the second episode, the second part, but I always like to see Kyle Chandler. I mean, this is a pretty typical episode around this time period for this show.
Kyle Chandler,
go ahead.
Rest in peace, early edition. Do you remember that show? Anyhow,
yeah, no, sorry. That was like the first time I ever saw him on anything.
Yeah.
That was a cool show. That was where he could see the next day's news.
Got the next day's newspaper. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think I remember the commercial for that one. Mm-hmm. Good concept. The advertisement.
Good concept. What were you going to say today?
I think the standout for this one is Christina Ricci, because when you watch this episode, she really does give a super great performance, mm-hmm. considering the craziness that's going on. As she's understanding like this insane thing that's happening around her, where her hand is on a bomb. You don't know if it's going to go off, which realistically it should have already, as we point out, as Jonathan does a great job of pointing out. And then there's this moment, we don't play a lot of it, but there's this moment when everyone is supposed to leave the room, and the head surgeon goes out to talk to the bomb squad. And the only people that are in the room, just to kind of minimize equipment and everything, is Christina Ricci's character holding the bomb. And then the guy who is squeezing the bag to keep the man on the table alive. And all of a sudden, he just turns into this really interesting guy who's struggling with, like, he doesn't want to die if the bomb explodes. Mm-hmm. And so he incredibly calmly just hands the bag to Christina Ricci to hold on to. So now she's got the bomb in one hand, and then she's like, okay. And he says, just squeeze it, you know, just in this. And then he just starts backing out mm-hmm. of the room, and he says, I have kids. And then he turns and leaves. And so
that's a cool scene.
It was really intense. And I can kind of be like, wow, that's such a dick move, but also I get it in a weird way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Like, yeah, they kind of try to, because they even have a comment early on, like Isaiah Washington slams him or something early on, where it's like clearly they're trying to set him up as a villain. But I'm like, I don't mm-hmm. know. Like, I think a lot of people would do that, whether you think that's right or wrong.
I would say is I would hope I would be... smart enough when I saw something like that to be to say, unless I'm actually in a room with a bomb, I have no idea how I would react. You know what I mean? Like,
no, right? Yeah,
100%.
Yeah,
yeah. I thought that was a really interesting moment.
They do amplify the drama a little crazy, because he describes pink mist to her, which is the explosion thing, and he like describes this horror, like the horror of what would happen if he released, to the woman who's holding the bomb. And you can just see Ricci's acting as she's starting to fall apart and freak out. And so then she's left alone to manage squeezing this bag and hold this bomb by herself. And the next time you kind of check in with her, you can just, she's acting so well in that she's genuinely falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, that makes this episode for me, maybe from time to time there are performances that are like that, but I can't remember one. I didn't remember this episode because it's been so long since I've seen it. But now being able to watch it, I'm like, man, this was a really good performance. And I'm glad we gave her a send-off. She super deserved it, because it was really powerful.
So you remember that more than the shower dream scene?
My God.
Well, that's the thing. Everything else trash, happening around right? this is garbage. Like, you've got Izzy
garbage.
Izzy decides to have sex with Alex to, you know, because it might be the end of the world or whatever. And then, I don't know, Bailey's going into labor. Like, that's such a lame plot
and
device
like
to throw in.
Peeking in on the room that apparently you can just look in on someone's cervical exam. It's just it's so a bomb that should have gone off so many times before they realize it's a bomb. You know, it's stupid.
George's facial expression, though, when he's looking at them in the shower was hilarious. I was so glad you wrote something about that. Because it's like that dude is trying to look like real.
I love that
he's trying
too.
To look cool, I guess.
I love that too. Can I transition us into the sins then, since we're talking about them? The one you just mentioned, I had down, the you shouldn't be crying snot from tear ducts, I thought was really funny, just the way that was worded. This is the strangest auction I've ever seen. Such a great point. It was like going once. Twice in that situation.
What is that?
Izzy would be extremely proactive at TV sins and then shortly after fired for sexual harassment. I really love that. And then of course the Jonathan triggering sin of me pep talking myself in the public restroom when the deuce wants loose.
It was really great though. Laugh. No, I love the sin. I mean, I was like, that's a great sin. It's really gross, but it's a great sin.
That's the one that
Barrett was like, good God.
Good God. I'm like, that's good though, right? Like, when your boss reacts, good God, that's good.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Totally. Jonathan, what about you? What are some that you wanted to mention?
Well, you mentioned the shades being open. Were they? Oh, no, this was a different, actually. I'm sorry, that is different than them looking in on her. That one part where they had, like, you were like, the shades are open, and they're having, like, this serious discussion. In the same thing in the shower scene, critiquing the sponges, I thought was really funny.
And then they were so big!
And then the one I put on there, I love that it worked out the way the editors did it, but, like, where the, I can't remember the chief's name, but he's just announcing all this crap, like, and they were trying to be so secretive about it, and he's announcing all this stuff in the middle, and that random dude's just walking by, and we pointed the arrow at him, like, I'm pretty sure he doesn't want this guy to know what's going on.
Yeah, another incredibly perplexing plot point that they've called Code Black. Mm-hmm. Only a certain number of people know about it. So much time passes, no one clues the people in that should know about it. But then they're just announcing stuff so loudly. It was just, it's just such shit drama.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're addicted to it. So
yeah, yeah. I don't know why. Danae, what about you?
I wanted to mention the hairdryer one. I was really nervous writing this in because I didn't want it to come across like birth shaming. people can bring whatever the fuck they want to birth. It's birth. But I just wanted to be silly. And so I pointed it out, and I was thankful to not get roasted in the comments on that one. But that was one that I was really nervous to stick kind of in the script. But it ended up working out. I loved the outtake, is your hand touching anything hard? And then it's like, are you flirting with me?
Yeah.
That was from NYPD Blue. I thought that was just a funny little.
I didn't know what that was from. I didn't go back look at the script, but yeah, I couldn't remember what that was from. That was hilarious.
And then the whole auction thing with like the congrats, the woman at the table, you've won breakfast and a private lesson with Brandon, like just which was from a reality.
That's an SNL sketch, I think.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Live, yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Because it was a Chad. I think it was a Chad sketch, right?
I think it might have been. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So those are sort of fun to play on. But you guys mentioned everything else.
Nice. Great job, guys. You took a horrible show and made me laugh a lot. Well done. Speaking of taking horrible things and making me laugh, let's move on to Jake Paul, fresh out of London, music video sins. I literally have nothing to say about this video itself.
Tried,
so you guys
I
can
tried
go.
So hard. I try so hard not to judge people.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So I'm just not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything
here?
About this.
Are we
dude.
Skipping for real?
Sure, because... let's go right to the video. I don't have anything to say. I don't have anything to say.
Scariest thumbnail I've ever seen in my life, though. When they sent that thumbnail to us, I was like, oh my God.
Well, what's really funny, too, is we had Annabelle pop, and then we had this mm-hmm. one pop, you know, like where we saw mm-hmm. both of them. Mm-hmm. And the comment was like, which is scarier, the Jake Paul or the Annabelle thumbnail?
It was definitely Jake Paul. I know nothing about this dude. Nothing sounds good about him, though, that I've heard. So I just kind of like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all situation.
I mean, I feel like
me,
the only thing positive you can say is his brother might be worse. But because
sure.
his brother's the one sure. that took the pictures in the suicide forest and posted them.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just talk about the sins, shall we?
I'll jump into a couple if you want me to.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Piggybacking on the picture, giving 1,000 sins for the picture being worth 1,000 sins. That was fun. I was like, oh yeah, that's what you're supposed to do here. That's super, super great. And I don't know. I just, there's several other that I kind of pointed out, but I think you guys are going to pop them. So that's just the one that I wanted to comment.
Okay.
Make it quick.
I don't know what we're talking about, but I can confirm there's definitely some alien language communication going on. I thought was really good. I don't need new friends. I don't like fake friends. And then the sin is just noted.
Yeah.
So good.
That's one we used to do a lot in music video sins. I don't think that we've used that one in a while. And Barrett put it in there, which I thought was great.
Oh, that's fun.
And also just the writing and delivery on, look, writing lyrics is hard. Just, you know, yeah, as if the narrator is having some compassion.
Oh my God.
For the lyric writing in this, I thought was great. What about you?
The only thing I had that you guys had mentioned was just at the beginning, Barrett doing all the different words, using ass, just like trying not to talk about the ass, but then using it in all the words. Because
can I just say,
opening is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. And
so much, but in fact, that we had to blur the crack, which we don't always do,
yeah,
right? Like
no,
it's just was
and
it
we
the
didn't
angle
at first. It's really funny you said that. We didn't at first, and Barrett actually said basically what you said. He's like, look, this is weird, but there's so much butt in here. I think we just have to blur the crap.
Yeah. So much butt, we had to go the extra mile with our blurring.
But that, that whole opening, it's like 20 seconds. And that video is only like 2.5 minutes. And it's like just 20 seconds of just... I don't know what it is. Like I just want to be in this dude's, I probably don't, but I kind of want to be in this dude's mindset for like just 10 minutes. Cause I want to know when he was coming up with the concept of this video. Like, I'm going to be over here eating bacon, drinking orange juice.
You're going to be laying on your stomach in
a thong.
You're going
to be laying in there in your thongs.
And here's what we're going to do with the camera. Just follow me here. We're going to have it follow the back of your legs right into your butthole. And that's just going to be the camera movement for about 10 seconds.
Let's complain about lift.
Classy. And, very classy.
And we'll make fun of a dude's dick size. That's what we're going to do for the first 20 seconds of this video.
Wow.
There are some times when you watch things and you're like, I think that that's just it for me. That's just the nail in the coffin for this artist. You know what I mean?
Well, or for culture in general.
We've covered videos of his before. And like nothing prepared me for this. Like I don't know what this is. Like I have no idea. And this will be ingrained in my brain.
We tried so hard not to talk about the video itself, and yet here we are.
We got to the butts, and we just lost it.
I can't even tell you what's wrong with it. I can just, it's one of the weirdest things I've ever, there's like a mariachi band. They've like got a stage with a crane behind it. And I don't know what that's about.
Anyway,
he's very happy about his house.
Let's move to something with at least a little bit of thought into it and quality. The Book of Eli. This was a Dicer Scott script, myself and Jeremy writing on this one. This of course is the Denzel is, spoiler alert, blind the whole time and you never knew it movie about carrying the Bible across the land.
Was the Bible a twist too? I couldn't remember if that was a twist as well, that it was the Bible.
Yes, but it was. But that's a mid-twist. That's like one of those kind of in the early part of the movie you realize what book he's talking about.
The bigger twist was that he discovers it's in Braille.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're like, oh.
I love this movie the first time I saw it. This is a movie that's right up my alley. It deals with spiritual things. It deals with, you know, religious things. It also is...
There's a lot of roads.
Yeah, lots of roads, which I love. and so I really had a good time. There's beautiful camera work in it, which we mentioned in the Sins video. So I just really had a good time with it. And Denzel Washington is just incredible. I had a really good time with this movie. Upon seeing it, I really was aware of, as you are, a lot of the issues. However, I still kind of like this movie. I still enjoy it. So.
I saw it. I've seen it once. I don't know. I don't think I saw it like in the theater or anything. I think I just watched it like it was on cable one night, like a couple years later. But I remember liking it. I've never watched it again. I did recall a lot of stuff though when I was watching the video. Like, you know, I was surprised at how much I remembered.
Yeah.
And I did like the twist. And it probably does cheat a little bit, but I still thought I remember thinking back. Like, no, that was.
It handles it pretty well.
I think the Hughes brothers are fairly underrated directors. I mean, Menace to Society, I still think is a fucking masterpiece, but I don't know that they've ever come close to that. But this is a solid movie.
Guys, I have to do something now that I don't want to do. And I'm so sorry that I have to do this right now in the show, but we didn't hear what Barrett had to say about Jake Paul, and we're gonna have to go back to Jake Paul.
For
a second.
I have
God,
some
you
good
scared me. I thought something had happened.
I have some good news. He never told us.
Yay! We can stay with Book of Eli, but let's hear what Jeremy has to say about Book of Eli.
He actually wrote quite a bit, so let's jump into it. He says the Book of Eli is very entertaining, if silly, post-apocalyptic adventure. Silly, huh? That's interesting. I think like comedy when I think silly, but I didn't pick that
up
when I was
watching. It is an interesting adjective. Yeah. I think he means just like it's ridiculous at points.
Gotcha.
I think is
okay,
what he means.
Okay.
Yeah.
This movie asks a lot, though. It asks you to believe that some kind of catastrophe wiped out nearly every human being, but less than a year later, it was safe to go outside, and that all copies of the Bible were found and destroyed except for one, which is in Braille. The biggest ask is that you, the audience, believe Denzel actually does all the shit he does in the movie while being blind. There are a dark, cornered cult group that claim his character is not blind, but is merely able to read Braille. And to those people, I give the finger. Oh, my.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's blind. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
No, he's just saying that the Braille you read with your fingers. He's just saying, I give the finger as in, like, I read the story.
Oh, I see. Okay. When I started reading that, I thought that was like in the movie. There was a dark group of people.
No, he's talking about real life.
There's
a group who defend Denzel in this movie by saying, no, he's actually not blind. But that is not true. Okay. That is not true. Objectively not true.
You have to be working pretty hard to excuse movie bullshit if you believe he's sighted, but just casually happens to read Braille. He continues by saying, fuck you. The highlight of the movie is a pair of minute-long one-shots of gunfire action at the climax of the film. The camera zooms inside the house via window, pans back and forth for dialogue, goes back outside through a bullet hole. There must have been so much passing of the camera there, it's ridiculous. Gary Oldman is chewing it up, and Mila Kunis is good. Denzel is subdued, but great. The biggest problem, aside from being a blind ninja, is that he has been walking west with a book for nearly 30 years and still hasn't hit California. Someone needs to plot his journey over the U.S. map with a line and the sounds of yakety sax.
Sorry, I gave a little sound effect for you there. I don't know why that happened.
No, it's like you read my mind. And I was like, is that the one that goes? And then you started, I was like, yay!
Was that Benny Hill?
Yeah, Benny Hill used yakety sax all the time.
Gotcha,
yeah.
Okay. He gets near his concluding thoughts here by saying, I could walk to California in a month. Easy. Ooh, challenge. Do you think he could? Could you walk to California in a month?
I thought when you were saying challenge, I thought you were talking about whatever you were doing with your hair. I was so confused. I thought you were like, oh, I can take my hair out while talking to you guys.
Watch this, guys. I can unclip this and talk at the same time. I could walk to California in a month, easy, and a blind guy should still be able to feel the fucking sun and know what direction he's traveling. Also, Tom Waits is in this movie for no reason at all. He's a shopkeeper that charges Denzel's iPod. He's got three lines. Fucking waste. I fucking love this movie. I hate its flaws, but I love it. I both love and hate that Alcatraz is where where the book people are holed up. But because that's cheesy, but it also makes perfect sense. That's about it.
I like how Jeremy has sometimes like these internal struggles. I feel like I love when he does this on Sendcast where it's like, I guess it's a movie. Like when he's talking about a movie, I guess he thinks that like objectively it's not the best. But he loves it, and it just seems like this inner struggle of what he should say about it. And I'm just like, just say you like it. Who gives a shit? Like, it's a movie.
Yeah.
But he does. He has like that's what it made me think of when you were reading that, because that's exactly how he talks about a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very good at reading now. It's part of my job.
Yeah, you can even take your hair down while you're doing it. It's amazing.
I know. I can multitask.
I didn't know girls could do all those things.
I know.
It's impressive.
We have brains.
It's very impressive. Danae, my understanding is you watched the first part of this video, got triggered by an animal death at the beginning and did not watch the rest of it. Is that the case?
I got a little ways into it before I was like, okay, I'm seeing enough here that I'm not having a good time.
Yeah, I wondered
and I'm
about
struggling.
That. Yeah.
So yeah, I just decided to kind of like let it go.
Was there anything in that time that you wanted to mention as far as the video itself goes?
Yeah, I had three things that I just sort of wrote down as far as sense goes. One was going to go ahead and watch Denzel wash his own balls by firelight to the list of things that I never really needed to see.
I love that happened after you said you were a good reader, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm a good reader always. For about 12 seconds and it falls apart.
That would absolutely happen to me. I'd be like, I'm really good at walking, and then I would just fall on my face.
Two roads diverged in a gray scale landscape, neither promised color. I don't know why. I just thought that was really
that
fun.
That was hilarious.
That's good.
But the one that I wrote, this is what I wrote in my notes. Okay, Aaron. So I'm pinning this one on you. Without soap, you wouldn't have to keep replacing the good oils that is removed with lotions and powders and other products. That was a you, right?
What? No.
That was 100% you.
Yeah, that was me. That was definitely me.
That's about as far as I got. I mean, I have plot questions. I'm curious enough to like read about this. It looked like a really interesting story, but
it really is.
That's as far as I got.
I think it really is. Jonathan, what did you have from this video?
I really like you did the B-I-B-L-E because that's the book for me. Mm-hmm. That brought back memories of things. You cannot smell age. I've tried.
I've tried.
Who wrote People from Missouri?
That was me.
I was wondering if that was Jeremy like trolling you in the script.
No. That sin just cracks me up because he yells "Show me" so loud.
Show me.
Is that really a Missouri thing?
It's the show me state.
Motto. It's the show me state.
The state motto.
Oh, that's right. I was just thinking
that way too excitedly.
No, I just forgot. Yeah. I was saying it was funny to me because I know you guys are from Missouri, so that's why it was funny to me. I wasn't even thinking about the show me part.
Yeah.
Jeremy singing Green Day was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the Batman Forever outtake. That was perfect. I don't know who put that in, but that lined up like perfectly with him walking and talking.
Yep. Yeah. That's good stuff. I would also mention, but it got Sepia's nose. I just thought that was funny when he was talking about the color scheme of the movie. So funny. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to bring attention, because you mentioned the B-I-B-L-E. I slipped a few kind of evangelical upbringing sins in here mm-hmm. that people in the comments are loving, because many of us have dealt with them. But someone's been doing their sword drills was one that I kind of went back and forth on putting in the script, because I didn't know who would necessarily know what that was. But I found it too good, the fact that he is so good with an actual sword, and then you know that he memorized the Bible to be able to repeat it at the end. Because sword drills, if you don't know, are when you have like drills on what verses you've memorized in the Bible.
I didn't know that. I thought I was actually going to ask you, is that when two guys pee and they try to cross the streams?
Yes, that is also what it is. That's very swords. Much part of evangelical upbringing.
Penises sounds so fun like that, like being what? Able to do that kind of stuff. That just sounds cool.
Penises maybe are fun. Maybe when you're a kid.
Yeah. When you're not a kid, so yeah, right.
Like if Aaron and I were doing it in our mid-40s, like that'd be weird.
But Danae's right. I think a lot of times we forget as men, like how cool it is that we can just aim our pee. Like, you know, we have a hose and we can just aim it wherever
so
we want to go.
I remember like in elementary school in the men's room, some of the guys would see how far, who could pee from the farthest away and still get it in the urinal. Yeah. And this one dude, man, all the way back at the wall could just nail it. And
over the stanchion.
When you're 8 years old, that is badass.
Well, there was that one music video that we reviewed where it was like a really pastel candy-like scape. And there was that guy sitting up on like a ledge and he was peeing off of the ledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or at least that's the joke.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I know. I know what you're saying too, and I don't remember if it was. I don't remember.
We had a conversation about like how difficult it would be to like get that arc.
Oh mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I have penis envy.
Yeah. Totally. Totally.
Anyway, carry on.
So the sword drills one was the other one I wanted to mention, because the Bible is called the sword of truth. And so that's where that comes from, the idea.
That makes
sense.
I've never heard that before. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. So you're just like quizzing each other on scripture?
Yeah. It's like who can get there the fastest, you know, kind of thing. And knows the verse.
Did you guys ever do like a name that tune game where it was like, I can name that verse in two words or something?
Okay. Well, you say that. You're not far off of Bible quizzing.
No, that sounds like something that would
Bible
happen.
Bible quiz.
Bible quizzing is like that, where it's like okay. So the way we Bible quiz with jump seats, I don't know if you remember these, but you basically, your butt sits on points of contact that break an electric current. And then when you stand up, like whoever stands up first, the first electric current to get to the judge will light up. And so, you know, it's all about jumping, and you would try to memorize verses so that you could jump at the earliest, you know, point. So it really is kind of a name that tune kind of thing. Like you would try the least words possible to know what Bible verse they were saying.
I was just thinking, because if that hasn't happened, I'm going to create that shit, because that sounds
nice.
That sounds like a game. The Parker Brothers would be like, yes, we want that.
Yeah. Yeah. Sword Drills by Milton Berle. or Milton Bradley, Milton Berle. What am I doing over here? What is even happening right now?
Let's move on. Let's just go on to the next one while we still have brain cells.
All right, Annabelle Comes Home was an Atkinson Watkins script. Chris and Jonathan writing on this one. I have never seen this movie. I assume Danae has not seen this movie. We're down to Jonathan and Chris telling us about this movie.
You've seen the first two though, right?
I have.
I remember you reviewing the second one saying like, I didn't like this, but people that like these kind of movies might like it. I don't know why I remember that.
Yeah, I have. I watched the first two. Why don't we start with Chris's thoughts?
Annabelle Comes Home is nothing but a huge ad for another Conjuring movies. For other Conjuring movies. Guys, I shouldn't be reading. Okay. That's sort of what the Annabelle series has become. The doll is one of the biggest MacGuffins in cinema history because it is the title character and all it does is attract other demons. But does Annabelle the doll have any real wants or needs? No idea. Not sure the movie does either. My favorite thing to pick on in this movie is a small thing, but the idea that the doll is so evil that Ed and Lorraine Warren have to give it two barriers of holy protection is laughable to me. Then they stick it in a glass case. Most reasonable people would probably make it so that nobody could open the case easily with a key or even see it, or put it in a container that you could simply smash if you wanted, but they prominently display this doll in their artifact room as if it needs to fit in with the decor. Some research here. I watched a couple of videos with the real Ed and Lorraine Warren. I saw their interviews concerning the
Amityville
House. What an interesting, the Amityville. What an interesting word that is.
It's a city in New Jersey. Oh. You really don't know Amityville Horror, the movie? It's based on a... do you not know it either, Aaron?
Oh, I know. I know Amityville.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I was shaking my head because I didn't expect Danae to know. It didn't seem like something she would know.
She's into true crime and stuff. And I'm not saying this is true, but it's a pretty popular... it was a house in Amityville, New Jersey that is supposed to be haunted. A real house. And then they made a movie based on it and all that stuff.
Okay.
But,
gotcha.
And then the Warrens in real life, the actual Warrens, were called in to investigate to see if whether it was haunted or not.
Interesting. Okay. Anyways, Chris is saying that he saw their interview concerning the Amityville house and Annabelle, which is actually a Raggedy Ann doll. Mm-hmm. Well, that's terrifying. And not the greasy, evil-looking, well-crafted monstrosity that they use for this movie. Ed Warren throws down the gauntlet about Amityville Horror in what looks like a cable access show. Quote, I will pay $10,000 to anyone who can prove the hauntings at Amityville are real, as if anyone could actually do that. And that's Chris's thoughts.
Jonathan, what are your thoughts on the movie?
I like it better than Chris. I don't like particularly like think it's that great or anything, but this is a weird franchise though, where the Annabelle specific, not Conjuring verse, but just the three Annabelle movies, where I think each one is better than the one before. Like the first one is terrible, the second one is like okay, this one is like as close to good, I guess, as they've gotten. It has a really nice cast. McKenna Grace is in this.
McKenna Full of Grace, you mean?
Yeah, she is adorable with her little bob cut. And Madison Eisman from the recent Jumanji movies is in this. I really like her. And then obviously Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson show up as the Warren. They kind of bookend the film.
Right.
But he's right. It feels like I think the basic idea is that, you know, they were just like, oh, let's use the Warren's artifact room and have all these things come to life and, you know, terrify these kids for a night. It's kind of fun, but there's nothing to it. There's nothing special about it. It's a lot of cliches and with some nice performances centered around it. It's a nice looking movie. I mean, I'm sure these movies have money behind them, it's fine. I think it's probably pretty good. I can see this being like a fun audience type pleasing, you know, movie. Like it would be fun with like a packed audience in a theater. I did see it in the theater, but I don't think there were that many people there. It's okay. It's perfectly fine.
I was not attracted to seeing this movie by the Sins video.
You wouldn't like it. I don't think you'd have any interest in it.
Did you watch the video today? The Sins video?
Yes, I did.
What are some of your thoughts?
I thought it was just a yes or no question, so I was super excited that
it was a yes or no question.
I was like, I know the answer to this one. Yeah, and it looks so terrible. Like, But maybe it's because I'm biased because I'm just watching the opinions of those who like wrote the script, mm-hmm. right?
Right, yeah.
But it did seem as though I don't understand what Annabelle does except for that she attracts other demons, but then like her purpose, is that her purpose? And then like she needs a soul. And then it just seemed like you guys were asking a lot of really legitimate questions.
She's supposed to be a conduit, but, and so like basically like other demons can use her to get somebody else's soul, I guess.
Yeah. But you know, like towards the end, it just seemed like there's all this stuff happening. There's coins, yeah. There's hands coming out of boxes, there's Annabelle, there's a demon, there's a blonde that was kidnapped. What was that about?
She wasn't kidnapped. That was like, you're talking about she had the coins on her eyes and stuff. She wasn't kidnapped.
There was like a blonde in the picture that looked just like the other girl or something. Oh, what was that?
Yeah, which I don't know, because she didn't really look like her, so that was weird. But one of the things that Madison Eisman sees later is like a replica of herself. I assume it's just a demon doing some demon shit.
Right, but that's what it seems weird to me is like, is a scary movie scary when you understand the universe, or is it scary whenever you're just throwing a whole bunch of horror stuff at somebody? And that's what it seemed
directed,
like.
Who directed Shazam? What's it? David Sandberg?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he did the second one. He did Annabelle.
Creation?
I can't even think. Creation. And Chris and I have actually sent all three of these, but when we did the Annabelle Creation video, David Sandberg tweeted out like a few months later or something. He's like, oh, I just noticed they did Annabelle Creation. You know, CinemaSins did. He's like, I could have just told them pretty much everything is demon shit. And so, yeah, it was really funny. So that's kind of what, and he didn't direct this one. This was Gary Dauberman, I think. But I just, that's exactly pretty much like, that's just what you're supposed to think, I guess. This is just demon shit. You know, And it's that real generic thing I hate too, where like ghosts are always, or demons, like, even though they could just suck your face off right away, they start fucking with you. Like, they turn off the TV and they call you. And I mean, it's just dumb
then
stuff.
Then they
like
get
that.
To it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to say, though, despite the darker content of what, you know, is happening on the screen, this script was really fun.
What did you like? What were some of your favorite parts?
I wrote down like 7 or 8 that I was just like genuinely enjoying. The whole series about like, well, at the very beginning, like the holy gum, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, now why don't you put on holy gum on the lock and throw a blessed sheet over it, maybe tie it down with
a
sacred
really
knot
bugged
of rope.
Chris. Like that really bugged Chris, like just everything they had to do to keep the doll like away from everybody. Yeah, it was crazy.
And then also like the seat, like making sure that it was in comfort.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
So good. Bechdel test.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me what that is again.
So the Bechdel test is a thing from, it was a cartoonist, I think, that she wrote a book. Her name is Bechdel. So. And basically she would judge movies, or say there's a way you can judge movies by seeing how the women characters act in them. And if there is any scene in the movie where two female characters talk to each other and it doesn't involve talking about a man, you know, it doesn't involve talking about a relationship or a boyfriend or a husband or that kind of thing, then it, you know, beats the Bechdel test or whatever. So in that scene, those two women were talking, and then all of a sudden she mentions, hey, did you see that guy behind the counter? You know, kind of thing.
Right. Okay.
And we had that one recently, though, where they were like, you know, Jurassic Park passed the Bechdel test.
Yeah, yeah. It's a silly little test. I mean, what's nice about it is it helps you pay attention to female characters and stories and how they're written, whether they are have their own motivations, their own individuality.
Or they're motivated by relationship.
Right. But as a test, it doesn't mean that a movie isn't or is sexist. It just doesn't work that way. But yeah.
Right. Well, that's kind of what I got from it, but I really love the delivery of it, because before that, this was an A++++ movie.
Yeah, I had that written down too.
Just all the pluses. That one got me. Let's see. The mention, the dragging, like that's what this movie feels like, is the dragging and the sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
I was such a good burn. What a great burn. Or adding 20 cents for being interrupted, like the horror being interrupted, like get to the horror already. I'm not saying that Feely Meely and all this stuff, just everything about that. But there's like this whole run about, you know, the ringer and everything. Mm-hmm. I was really just enjoying all that. And then, of course, the outtake. For the fifth element, the give me the cash was fantastic.
Yeah, that's nice to see that pop up.
I think I put Cable Guy in there when Jim Carrey runs up to
sure. Yeah.
But we've used that one a bunch. So I was really happy that Chris put something different in there, because that was hilarious. Give me the cash.
I like the do not get as the finisher for one of the sins I thought was really funny. That fog looks like it's about to wrap itself around Ed and make some little fog babies. Made me laugh. Frosting on before putting the cake in the oven. We had
what
two cake frosting sins this week. What is it with
we
us?
Did.
How do we do that? The other one,
and that was one of those where I'm writing about it being burnt and like the frosting's not going to help. And then I was like, oh wait, and she put frosting on there before. And then I started thinking about that. And I remember my wife was home when I was writing. I went there, I was like, you don't put frosting on a cake before you put it in the oven, do you? She's like, no, never. And I was like, oh great, so that's a sin too. You know, it was like
that's
like
so funny.
The process of writing this sin.
Danae wrote one in the Phineas and Ferb Star Wars about the frosting, you know, putting the frosting on right after it was out of the oven. And so I just so weird how those things happen sometimes. Oh no,
we frost it before it goes in. We frost it after it comes out. There is a perfect frosting time, and nobody got it this week.
Nobody's getting it. Oh no, the milk is moving by itself. These demons are evil. there were a lot of those in this, and where it was just like offsetting what is supposed to be horror with just stupid comments, which I love. There was the any pizza left, which really made me laugh.
That was one of my favorites, and Chris wrote that.
And then you're dead to me, Feely Mealy. I lost it at that one too.
Yeah, Chris really went off on Feely Mealy.
As you should.
It's great.
As you should.
Yeah, I had I wrote the sin about about it being a real game, but you know they were not taking the turn. That you know that I actually put that in here. I think that she would be. What did I say? Mary Ellen would be terrible at board game instruction sins. All the other ones was just Chris going off on this game.
Like, yeah.
I felt like it almost felt like he had a real personal connection to it. I don't think he does, but but it was just really funny. But yeah, I also liked the bit at the end where she's sitting there at the table and we had the sin. Couldn't they bother to show up on time so Judy didn't have to sit there thinking the world hated her? And then we cut to Judy just sitting there with like nobody at her party.
Yep.
I really liked Say Anything If It Happened During Watergate. Guitar Hero was also another one. And Danae was talking about that, about the two pictures, you know, like, oh, she looks just like you. And we did she has blonde hair. It's uncanny.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And then I love that Chris wrote the bit where it was like the Sixth Sense thing. So would you say you see dead people?
Yeah.
No, it was really fun. We had a blast. It's really cool that we've like done all of them together. So we kind of, you know, we can kind of play off on that too. Like, you know, we've written these together. So it was kind of fun. They seem to always come out well.
That's why I keep assigning you and Danae to Star Wars stuff. Cause you know, you're so good with it and it's just a tradition now.
No,
so
doing so good.
Oh, I did want to mention real quick though, the discount Karen Shipka was really funny too, because Kernan Shipka, because she does look just like her. And then I just randomly found out, I had forgotten about this, but she actually played young Kernan Shipka, or Kieran Shipka, however you say it, in Sabrina. The new Sabrina show. She played a younger version of her in that, so that worked out really well.
Nice. That's interesting.
Hey, podcast peeps. It's me again. Those are my dogs. Those are my... every time I talk, wow. Is this how Aaron feels when we're okay? We're gonna try this. I just wanted to tell you about the survey again, which is at cinemasense.com/BTS. So go fill it out.
All right, let's move on to keeping tabs.
The internet is a communications tool used the world over where people can come together to bitch about movies and share pornography with one another.
Ha ha! Oh, jeez.
This is the most public yet of my many humiliations.
We're just going to talk about something we did in research or getting ready for these videos. Something about the process of making these videos that stood out to us from this week. What do you guys got?
You know, I'm going to just go first because I'm a disappointment. I didn't do hardly anything interesting for my scripts. I didn't have much.
Well, you already knew everything about Star Wars. So
you didn't have anything to research on Star Wars or Grey's Anatomy.
I usually write something down as I'm, you know, putting things together, and I didn't write anything down. And then I was trying to figure out before the show. And I'm like, I just don't think I did any fun research, but I did do some research during the show today about Bee's Knees. So we can just say,
yeah, that's true. You did watch all those Head and Shoulders commercials, though.
I was going to say, you didn't do any research on sponge that. Sizes or, you know, crevices or.
She reenacted. She got a couple friends and reenacted the scene for Justin so she could kind of figure out what.
Right.
Hey, listen.
It's research.
Listen.
For research.
I will say it so Danae doesn't have to, but if you're cleaning your crevices, man, you got to do that with your hands. She's absolutely right. You can't do that with sponges. It just doesn't get all the way in there.
No, it doesn't. I mean, you can kind of like do the outer area.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But sponges don't
really
go so far.
Absolutely car wash size sponges.
Those oh no, were not... they were ridiculous. That was like a mixture of like a car wash fantasy,
yeah,
and a shower 100%. Fantasy.
Yeah, 100.
Yeah,
and then the actor didn't know how to play it, so that was interesting. Everything about that scene was just
he was
so
deer
bizarre.
In headlights, angry. That was confused.
Like, that was like it was kind of the same thing, kind of in the Jake Paul thing, the beginning with the women on the. But it was kind of like it was a very unsexy sexy scene.
Right. It was really strange. I was like, uncomfortable.
You have like three beautiful women like naked in a shower bathing each other. And you're just kind of like, this is just weird.
And like, you're just staring at him like, so messed up.
Jonathan, what about you? What's your QB tab
I guess
this week?
We'll keep talking about Annabelle. Mine was, I looked up the Warren's artifact room because when we had a sin in there where they showed that thing about Annabelle as their most deadly object or whatever. And so yeah. I looked up other things they had. And then I discovered that they had that, they had a wedding dress that causes the wearer to murder people. I mean, obviously, this is all supposedly. I don't believe any of this, but that sounded more deadly to me. And they also had a shadow doll, which can visit you in your dreams and stop your heart. That seemed more deadly to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, but no, it was just interesting. I was looking, and apparently they have a museum because are they both dead now or just he's dead? I can't remember, but they have a museum where they put a lot of this stuff. So I was just looking up different things they had in there. They have the Perrone family music box, which was the family in real life that they focused on in the first Conjuring movie. They have an organ that supposedly plays itself, which I thought organs did that. Like, aren't there organs that play it themselves?
Well,
there
certainly are. organs
player pianos.
Player pianos, yeah.
I'm sure this is not one of those, and they're saying it actually does.
That'd be funny if somebody's like, hey guys, there's a device in here. I don't know if you've seen this. It spins.
That would be amazing. There's a toy monkey in the movie, which is interesting. That actually exists. Supposedly, it was like possessed by a demon. It's like one of those monkeys that, like, you know, plays drums or cymbals.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Cymbal monkey. Yeah.
They have a Conjuring mirror. They have a lot of satanic idols. They have supposedly an actual vampire coffin. They have a brick from the Borley Rectory, which is supposed to be the most haunted house in England. They have a lot of children's tombstones. No clue why. Psychic photographs. And then, which Danae mentioned with Chris's thing, the Annabelle doll, which is actually this big Raggedy Ann doll, which I guess, I don't know if that was a trademark thing. Like, they couldn't use it because it was Raggedy Ann, couldn't get permission, or if they just decided to create something that looked creepier. But Raggedy Ann dolls are creepy, man. So
yeah,
that would have been just as scary to me.
Did their vampire have a cold? What, they had a vampire coughing. Why was he coughing?
Hey, Aaron.
Yeah.
I thought you wanted to wrap the show early today.
Oh yeah. So yeah. Let's go. Let's move on. Let's move on. Listen, that pun took a total of 5 seconds. So I think we're good. All right. My keeping tabs this week was about the Golden Gate Bridge and the water underneath it. I did a lot of research on, you know, why there would be ships like on the surface level when the Golden Gate Bridge is right. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, maybe some of the water is missing, but so yeah, apparently it's 300
feet
deep.
That was really weird.
So yeah, why is all that stuff resting on
also,
the surface?
One of the largest gatherings of great white sharks is in that area for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I guess it's the temperatures.
Could be.
But I read that one time and I like somebody told me that as I was driving over the bridge. I was like, oh, thank you. Really, really appreciated you telling me that story while I'm driving over this fucking bridge.
The other thing I researched or didn't research, but just thought about more was the phrase blind leading the blind, which is a phrase that I've used many times in my life just to be like, you know, oh, that person isn't doing this. Well, you know, these two people can't get this done. It's like the blind leading the blind. And I've just never really thought about how insensitive that is. you know, to say it that way. And so, yeah, it was one of those things where I was glad to put that in a sin, because I kind of had a moment where I realized that something could be taken as insensitive. That is just a phrase that I use. And so it was, you know, I was glad to be able to
see that. Yeah. I mean, I can see that. I mean, I don't think anyone is purposely like mentioned actually thinking about blind people when they say that.
No, no,
no, it can definitely be taken the wrong way. I don't think a blind person would enjoy hearing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it was kind of one of those things where it's like, does this phrase actually work here? And then I got to think, because in that scene, Denzel Washington, who is blind, is literally leading somebody else who is blind. And I was like, look, looks like it's working just fine. And I got to thinking about it, and I was like, well, why wouldn't it? You know, why couldn't the blind lead the blind? It's just, I don't know. It was one of those things where it clicked with me. I was like, yeah, maybe I don't say that anymore.
Have you ever had a friend or known someone who's blind or acquaintance or anything?
I think acquaintance would be the way to say it. I actually wrote a song for a blind man went to church with a blind man who I loved his attitude, his personality. Mm-hmm. And he was always so positive and optimistic. And, you know, he had a way during church services of just moving his hands or moving his head or whatever. And I just got to thinking, like, what is in his imagination, in his world, you know, what does this look like? What does, quote unquote, worship, you know, look like, kind of thing? So, yeah, I wrote a song for him called Vernon's World. His name was Vernon.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
But it's just, I can't even, like, that would, I can't, because I'm such a visual person. Like, I think I would, like, you know, people ask, would you rather be blind or deaf? I mean, I think I would definitely rather lose my hearing, but, because I'm such a visual person.
Mm-hmm. You said you would definitely rather lose your hearing?
Is that what you said? Aaron, we want to move on, remember?
Listen, remember? Yeah, I'm trying to set a record today.
I'm taking, like, 5 minutes, and we're getting on to Aaron.
I'm trying to set a record today for horrible puns. Listen, it's going to happen.
No, I like that one.
It's going to happen. Let's move on to the comment section.
Know what you're thinking. I appreciate your honesty. You're a real straight shooter.
You are the ones who are the ball lickers.
We're each going to find a comment from the content. Could be from anywhere. Woo-hoo! Maybe from the YouTube channel, from the Discord, from Twitter, from other various aspects of social media, possibly emails we got, whatever the case may be. What do you guys got in your comment section, Danae?
Mine is from our YouTube for the podcast. We have one place on YouTube for all of the CinemaSins podcasts. So you can find it at the SinCast channel. And then we have our own playlist for BTS. So Ace Moonshot on last, I think it would be 2 weeks ago's episode for episode number 63 says, I'm the kind of guy that commentary tracks on movies that were made. I groove on hearing how the sausage is made. Figuratively speaking, that is, BTS is really great at showing the BTS. Comedy is hard. Not sure how you grind out so much content without losing your way, which I thought was kind of a cool thing. He or she goes on to say, it is very impressive then to edit it, get the timing right. Just wow. Kudos to the team, regardless of the alphabet designation.
Aww.
I think I follow most of that, Ace. And thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate that very much. That's awesome.
This was always one of those moments where I was really happy to see this comment, because we did a sin for Grey's Anatomy that I wrote where the whole thing that was going on with the bomb threat was called a code black. And none of the residents seemed to know what that was. And I just thought that was weird. But I tried to like research it and I couldn't find anything that told me whether that was weird or not. But it still just didn't make any sense to me. So I put a sin, and both Danae and Barrett agreed that it made no sense that they wouldn't know. And then so Andrew Park on YouTube for the Grey's Anatomy episode wrote, I used to work at a hospital as a medical records clerk part-time during college summers. I was the nobodiest nobody that existed in that medical complex. And on the back of my name tag was a list of all the color-coded bad things or happening codes. I knew that code black meant bomb threat. I guarantee you that Yang and every other person there would know what that means. I was like, yes!
Validation.
Yeah, because I'm always weird about stuff like that, because if I can't find definite proof, I typically don't leave it in. But that just seems so weird to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so much of the plot relied on them not knowing.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, at least a little bit did at that point.
No, it really did. Or at least the audience not knowing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I also had, can I do one really quick one too?
Sure.
From
yeah,
Annabelle, because this was another kind of one of those things.
As long as it sets me up for a pun, I'm fine.
Yeah, it absolutely will. We kept this, we put a sin, there's a sin in Annabelle Comes Home. It's Lorraine Warren says it wanted to get inside of you. And then Jeremy says that's no different to most guys when it comes to nurses. Okay. So that scene is in the original Annabelle, and that is the sin from that video.
Oh.
For the original Annabelle. And so I threw that in and I told Chris, I was like, I don't know if we want to actually make them aware that we're doing that. He's like, no, let's just have them read it as is. And if people get it, they get it. But Brad Horn on YouTube, he pointed that out as something he thought was really funny. And then Keo replied, it's funny because he says that exact same thing in the Conjuring video at the same scene. Or it was in the Conjuring, sorry, not Annabelle.
Yeah.
So I think he said it this time as a callback to the original sin, which we did.
Nice. Good
and
job.
And I'm so glad at least one person caught that, because that made
you
me
did
happy.
It.
Yeah, we've done that recently where we do a callback like that. And I like mm-hmm. that we can take sins and just kind of nurse them that way, you know, just kind of keep them going.
I'm literally just everything coming out of your mouth, Aaron. I'm like, is this another one? Or, like, are you working on it?
Did you just do one?
I felt like he was working on it.
I missed it.
I said, yes, we nurse our sins sometimes. And it's a sin about nurses. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Yeah, it happened.
I knew it. It was just, it was in your delivery.
I did a thing, guys. Sergeant Superman says, it's time we establish the Darth and Schmertz school of running the wrong way on a moving walkway.
Yeah!
And that was really
hilarious.
Great.
Hilarious. Oh, my God.
And then I wanted to mention an email I got about copyright discussion that we had on the last episode. And at the risk of, winding me up again, it was from Dark Rookie, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. But I really enjoyed it. And thank you for sending in that email. Anytime we have discussions that activate you to disagree, agree, whatever, send them our way. I will say this about the discussion. I did not mean it to be instructive. I think I threw like a 30 million or 30 years idea out there. That's just to like start discussion, because obviously I haven't researched this stuff to that depth. But anyways, they had some good points about, lifetime copyright for the creator while they're alive, that there may be some valid points to that, as opposed to corporations who own copyrights after the creator has passed away, becomes a little bit different.
Or families. You've got kids. I mean, that's, they're living off their, you know, whatever their parents did, because, you know.
Right.
I'm not saying that's wrong or right. I'm just saying that
right.
happens.
But I'm saying that's a discussion that should be yeah. had, because just yeah. the idea of owning intellectual property, the whole idea of intellectual property is just, it's, there's so much that's wrong about it. But I
intellect is so weird.
But I understand the protections.
Nobody should use
crazy.
Your brain.
I've heard a lot of authors say really weird stuff, like when they sell movie rights and stuff to their it gets really weird. Like Alex Cross, James Patterson was asked one time when he was doing the Alex Cross novels, and then he also had the Women's Murder Club novels.
Mm-hmm.
There were people that would ask him questions like, would you ever do a novel where they both were teaming up? And he's like, I can't.
Yeah.
Even if I wanted to, he's like, because one studio owns this character and one studio owns this one. And if it's like, once I put them in this book, then all of a sudden this other studio would have the rights.
Yeah.
And it's like, what a mess. Like, yeah. why can't you just, it doesn't make any sense why it has to be like that. I don't know. To me, doesn't make sense
yeah,
to me.
Yeah. And again, really appreciate the email. And I just want to reiterate, my goal a lot of times is just to start conversation and to have us think about things that we don't often think about, especially when there are systems that are broken. And I think the copyright system is broken. I think it needs fixed.
I had never thought about it before until you brought it up. So I appreciated it.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
It was the bee's knees.
let's move on to Beyond the Sins.
To infinity and beyond.
Somewhere beyond my wild history.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Let's chat about something else from the world of pop culture that we've seen recently. I'll go first this time. I got a digital screener for Netflix's movie Trial of the Chicago 7 that I was able to watch. It is actually supposed to technically be in theaters here for about 3 weeks before it comes out on Netflix, which I believe is the 16th of October is when it comes out on Netflix.
This is, this wasn't always a Netflix movie, right?
No,
I don't think
this
it
is
was.
A Paramount, I think. This is and so there's a really interesting thing, like why didn't they use CBS All Access or Paramount Plus or whatever they're gonna call it, you know?
CBS All Access, who pays us?
That's right. That's right. So this is a Sorkin film written and directed. You may know and love many Sorkin films as far as what he wrote. He also directed Molly's Game. Not sure if you've seen that one. I think I liked it more than most people did, but I'm also a Sorkinite. I love Sorkin's dialogue.
And
so.
You like poker.
And I love poker. So yeah, it was right up my alley in a couple ways. So it's interesting to see him continue down the director's path. And I think the main thing I would say about this movie, and I'm not going to spoil any of it, although it's based on historical stuff that happened during the riots of the Democratic Convention in Chicago in 68. I think it was 1968 when that happened. And it's about the trial of people that the government put on trial for inciting that riot. And it kind of goes into a lot of those details. But I mean, you say Aaron Sorkin, you know, courtroom drama, like I'm in. Like, I mean, you know.
I'm very excited about this movie.
Few Good Men was an Aaron Sorkin courtroom drama. And that's one of my favorites. So I got a chance to see it. And I guess what I would mainly say is that I think this movie announces Sorkin as a director to be reckoned with. I think he's finding his footing as a director and finding a way to keep himself in check that I didn't necessarily think he did in Molly's Game. And again, I like that movie more than most. But here he is really showing some competence with the direction of this movie. So I really enjoyed it. I think it's an A-minus at least. Cool. The only thing I think it has going against it is if you feel like the emotion is a little forced, that's going to be, there are moments in this movie that he's really playing the emotional beats, you know, really doing the heartstring thing. And it can, if you're tuned into it, feel a little bit forced. However, I think it works. I think it actually works. So my wife and I watched it. We both loved it. We had a great time. We laughed a lot because, of course, he's a brilliant writer and he's very humorous. And there are a lot of those cool Sorkin moments. And then we did our research afterwards about like, hey, what was, you know, the real situation like versus this? And it seems like he stuck pretty close to what really happened. Characterizations are always going to be a little bit different, but we really liked it. And I think it's great. And
yeah, my wife and I will definitely watch this together. She's such a history buff, and especially around this era, you know, stuff like this, just, you know, she loves. So
Mark Rylance, go ahead and give him the nomination now. He's absolutely astonishing in this.
Who's he going to have to compete with?
Probably just a few other people in this movie.
I mean, like, what's even going to come out at this point?
I know, right?
I made that joke about, you know, like, you could do Invisible Man for, like, every genre. Why not?
So anyhow, huge recommend. I really enjoyed it, but know that that's coming from somebody who loves Aaron Sorkin and the way that he writes.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, super quick, let's just do Aaron Sorkin screenplays. Few Good Men, Malice, which I love, by the way. Mm-hmm. The American President, I think that's a great movie.
Yep, sure is.
Charlie Wilson's War, underrated. Mm-hmm. Social Network, amazing. Moneyball, amazing. Steve Jobs, amazing. Molly's Game and Trial of the Chicago 7.
Yeah.
And then he's written on some TV shows like West Wing, Studio 60, and The Newsroom.
Newsroom,
yeah,
man.
It's ridiculous. It's a murderer's row of screenplays. I mean, he's one of the best, if not the best, writer.
Yep, he's incredible.
In my opinion.
What about you, Jonathan? What do you got?
I watched Enola Holmes last night, which is also Netflix. Apparently, we're sponsored by Netflix this week.
That's right.
On Beyond the Sin. No, but Enola Holmes came out last night. I'm a huge, I'm a mystery buff, but I'm a big Sherlock Holmes guy. I've read almost everything, and I've seen almost all the incarnations. This is actually based on a series of young adult novels that came out between 2006 and 2010 by Nancy Springer, and they're all focused on the sister, the younger sister of Mycroft and Sherlock Holmes. Her name's Enola. And I've never read these books. I'm going to look into them, though. I think my daughter might actually like them whenever they become age appropriate for her. But this is a movie based on the first novel in the series. And there's six novels that were written in that time period. Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things plays the main character, Enola Holmes. Henry Cavill is in this as Sherlock Holmes, and Sam Claflin plays Mycroft. You might remember him from The Hunger Games. He was, I don't remember the guy's name. I don't remember the character's name, but he was like supposed to be like he was like a pretty boy, basically. Like, right. He was like a, I don't know. He was in the second Hunger Games movie. And I think in the last two, but anyways, so this is mostly focused on her, even though Sherlock is a character in the movie. It's mostly focused on her. Oh, I should also mention Helena Bonham Carter plays their mother. I love Helena Bonham Carter. It's a great cast. And it's very much in the Sherlock Holmes tradition, you know, but it's just focused on her solving the mystery instead of Sherlock. So it's fun. I quite enjoyed it. I'm definitely going to check it. I'm going to see if my daughter wants to watch it. And I think it'll be a great thing to watch with her. I think this would be a really cool entry into the Sherlock Holmes arena for young adults. If they're interested at all. It's a really fun mystery. It's really fun performances. The Sherlock part of it, though, is interesting. Henry Cavill, I don't know if he was miscast, but I guess because they're focusing so much on Enola, Sherlock has to kind of become almost a different type of character than he is normally, which was kind of odd. But it wasn't that big of a deal because Millie Bobby Brown's so good, and I really like her, which is really good to see because I don't think I've seen her in anything else other than Stranger Things. So it was kind of nice to see her playing something different. I think it kind of did remind me of Nancy Drew, the recent Nancy Drew movie that they did with the girl from It. I think it's quite a bit better than that, though. But it did kind of remind me as far as like the it's very much for younger people. Let's put it that way. I don't know. It's a lot of fun. It's very light. It's very breezy. It's a fun mystery. Good performances. I think if you're a Sherlock Holmes fan, I don't think you're going to be blown away or anything. But I think this is a nice entry into that, into that filmography. I definitely would watch it again. I hope they adapt some more of the novels. I don't know if they are or not. They do leave it open at the end. And I hope they do. I would definitely watch some more adventures with Millie Bobby Brown playing this role. So
nice.
It's a recommend. It's a solid recommend.
I've heard good things. I think I'll check it out this week probably. Today, what do you got?
Well, based on our chat that we had for our Patreon bonus episode, I want to talk about my love of drag queens today.
Awesome. Now, listen, we have to say it was more than a discussion. It was outright chaos because whatever this video is, you decided to pull it up and you just lost yourself again. So, Sin Club members be looking forward to that bonus podcast.
Yeah, for real. So I'm going to tweet this link probably when this episode comes out with the exact moment of when the hilarity begins. You mentioned Netflix being this thing. So Netflix, on their YouTube channel, they have a series called I Like to Watch with Trixie Mattel and Katya. And so every once in a while I'll pop over because the two of those women together are hilarity for me. And so because I watch some of those from time to time and I get genuinely cracked up to tears, I've been watching Trixie Mattel's YouTube channel now, and she's just gaining popularity. Whomever edits her videos, it's really fun. It's like the editor has their own personality, and so as you're watching this video, like the editor will put their own like little notes up on the screen too, so it's just a different level of, I don't know, creativity and fun and interaction. And I think there's so many amazing things about drag queens, but one of the things I love the most is when they have an incredibly acute sense of humor and wit. And just how Trixie Mattel specifically talks and interacts with her guests and does just whatever random stuff she does. I can't look away. I find her to be fantastic. So I think I'm going to recommend Trixie Mattel's YouTube channel today, and subsequently the I Like to Watch playlist on the Netflix channel, which I will be linking for you guys.
Cool.
Very nice.
I'm going to tell my wife and daughter about that because I bet they would enjoy that. They love RuPaul.
You did that you did that very succinctly and efficiently, Danae. You didn't drag that out at all.
Oh my gosh. Let's end the show. We're done.
That's going to do it for Behind the Sins this week. Don't make sure to be subscribed. Not to this mess.
We're a mess.
Don't forget to make sure you are subscribed. Go ahead and leave a comment or rating as well. You can hang out with us on Twitter. We're at CinemaSinsBTS. We also have individual Twitters that you can follow and chat with. I'm at Aaron Dicer. She is at Danae Says.
DeneeSayS.
And he is at SamLoomis13. So for Jonathan Watkins, Danae Hughes, and myself, we will see you next week.
But what about our P.O. box?
Thanks for listening. Send any feedback to bts@cinemasins.com. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment. Find more ways to connect by visiting cinemasins.com/BTS.
Turn off your podcast, stop listening to stuff. It's time to work on your own junk. Don't say junk, because that means your pubic area.
I'm going to play some poker.
So it's an orgy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, aren't all poker tournaments also orgies?
It's strip poker.
Yeah, no, I just...
I thought you were talking about Texas Hold'em.
No. You just have to decide if the orgy's before or after the tournament. That's really the only decision you're making with poker. I'm sorry. Is that not every poker tournament? I get confused sometimes.
I almost thought about talking about Saw and Beyond the Sins because I'm actually going to watch, I'm rewatching the first four.
I'm waiting until I can watch them on a playground so that I can seesaw on a seesaw.
You could technically do that. There are parks seesaws.
And you can watch it on a phone. Yeah, exactly. Put your headphones in. Nobody would know what you were doing.
Find me one. Find me a seesaw these days. When's the last time you saw a seesaw?
Holy shit. I don't know.
Right?
Hey, real quick, too. I quit watching Lovecraft Country, which I might actually mention that in Beyond the Sins because I'm kind of going against anything. Well, I mean, I didn't really recommend it, though. I said I didn't know what I thought of it, but I would not watch it. I do not think that show's for you.
Okay, thanks.
That show quickly became not for me. I remember you telling me the story about how you recommended that show, Room 104, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And then the next week was that really terrible episode with all the penis pictures.
Yes.
That's kind of how I felt because like literally the next week of Lovecraft Country, I was like, whoa, this is not for me.
Well, and let's be clear, penises are fine. I don't mind penises or pictures of penises.
That's the only thing I remember about the
episode.
Right.
Yeah. It was just the episode itself was really bad. But that's the thing with an anthology sometimes, too. Like, I still love Room 104. Like, I feel like it's got a pretty good success rate.
I do, too. That was probably the worst episode.
Yeah.
That was probably the worst episode.
Yeah.
And it's funny that came after you recommended it.
While we're on the topic of unrecommending things, I finally sat down, and even though I've got a lot to watch, I was like, I want to laugh a little bit, and I threw on my recommendation from a couple weeks ago on CBS All Access, which is Drawn Together, mm-hmm. and that show is horrible.
It didn't hold up at all?
Oh, man. It is not held up, and it is so problematic.
That's unfortunate.
Okay, here's the thing. It is funny, but it does it in a way that I'm not down with anymore. Like it's I don't know. It was a weird experience for me to rewatch the first couple episodes of that show.
You're not pissed you watched it at some point in your life. Like, I don't need to watch it now.
Yeah.
No, there's shows like that.
Last night it was blowing up. We had conversations about phobias versus triggers going on, and then we had
that was my fault.
That's okay. No, it's not. It was a fun conversation. It needed to happen.
That conversation is one of my triggers, by the way, so please don't have that conversation anymore.
Oh, my God.
Because for some reason, I also have like 3 email addresses. I have no idea why I have that many, but whatever.
Oh, my gosh. Just 3?
I was going to say, shit. I have like 50 now.
Just 3 that I use at all. Now, one of them is because we changed the CinemaSins one, and then it's easier just to keep the old one, and I just have them both. Inbox is open. But then my old Yahoo one, I've just had that forever, and so there's certain people that, you know, I just don't want to have to tell people different stuff. And
that's eddiewatts@yahoo.com.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. No. No.
So I went back and I have this old spreadsheet that has old passwords in it. And I'm trying to figure out if I can get into my old Yahoo account just to see if there's anything in there. So anyhow, I go in and I couldn't figure out my password. It wasn't my normal password. So I went to this old spreadsheet and the password was Yahoo is making me mad one. That's for sure going to be an outtake. Why do I say things out loud?